So good morning. I'm Robert Hastings. I'm the Vice President for Communications for Northrop Grumman Information Systems Sector, and welcome. Last summer, here at the National Press Club, our President of Northrop Grumman Information Systems and Northrop Grumman's lead executive for cybersecurity outlined the company's deep engagement in helping fight the growing cyber threat. At that briefing, she provided information on the growing cyber threat our nation is facing and talked about Northrop Grumman's approach to cybersecurity. Let me remind you of a few of the points she emphasized at that time. Cyber threats are real. They're numerous, they're broad, they're pervasive. They can be nation states, terrorists, criminals, or nuisance hackers. Northrop Grumman protects its own network through our Cybersecurity Operations Center, which we announced last summer, and I know a number of you have had the opportunity to visit, a best-in-class network defense capability for management of vulnerabilities, intrusion detection and prevention, incident response, and forensics. As one of the largest contractors supporting the intelligence community, Northrop Grumman plays a significant role as a partner with the federal government in developing the tools, techniques, and systems used to counter the cyber threat facing military and intelligence communities. We play a lead role in protecting the global information grid, managing three of the top five DoD community emergency response teams. And we're on contract with DARPA to develop a national cyber range, an environment to test and analyze new concepts and technologies for countering cyber threats. And our Cyberspace Solutions Center in Maryland is dedicated to both independent R&D on cybersecurity projects, as well as carrying out contract work for our customers. While we have within our company arguably some of the best minds in the business working on sophisticated research, we look for a way to exponentially grow the research in this critical arena. And we're here today to announce the launch of a unique, perhaps one-of-a-kind, industry-academia partnership, the Cybersecurity Research Consortium. This consortium is a partnership focused on cyber research designed to address a huge and growing threat to our nation, our economy, our security, and the individual well-being of American citizens. Northrop Grumman, long a player in cybersecurity, has years of experience in the intelligence and defense worlds, sought out the best thinkers in academia to collaborate on this proactive research. By leveraging the creative intellectual freedoms of academia with the full spectrum of capabilities within Northrop Grumman, we can accelerate the pace of research, turning ideas into significant application. After introducing the consortium members, representatives from each university will address their specific capabilities and contributions to the consortium. Today you'll hear from Dr. Robert Brammer from Northrop Grumman, Dr. Adrian Perrig, Carnegie Mellon University, Dr. Gene Spafford, Purdue University, and Dr. Howard Schrobe, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Following the opening remarks of each of our presenters, we'll take your questions. Once we've completed the Q&A, we'll end the formal briefing and provide an opportunity for individual discussions if you desire. Everything said here today is on the record for full attribution. We're webcasting the briefing to a number of journalists who were unable to make it here today, and we're also recording the briefing for our own records. For those of you on the webcast, there is a press kit at northropgrumman.com/cybersecurity. It's the same one we have here today. Now it's my pleasure to turn the floor over to Dr. Brammer, who will talk about Northrop Grumman's role in this effort. Dr. Brammer.
Well, thank you, Bob, and good morning. My name is Bob Brammer. I'm the Vice President and Chief Technology Officer for Northrop Grumman Information Systems, and it's my pleasure this morning to introduce the Northrop Grumman Cybersecurity Research Consortium, or NGCRC as we call it. Northrop Grumman, the Sci-Lab at Carnegie Mellon, the Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab at MIT, and the Center for Information Assurance and Security, Sirius, at Purdue comprise the NGCRC. We will perform collaborative research in critical areas of cybersecurity and transfer the results of those research to the operations of our major customers. Membership combines Northrop Grumman, the leading provider of security systems and services to the U.S. public sector, with three world-class academic institutions. The consortium will stimulate educational initiatives and will grow outstanding cybersecurity professionals. Our research spans many areas of cybersecurity that may be defined as protection of information and information systems on networks. These areas include hardware and software security, privacy, simulation of computer attacks and defenses, and the protection of critical infrastructure. Our consortium combines outstanding people, the resources and experience of a leading systems integrator, and the flexibility and visionary style of leading research universities. We have begun a five-year program. We have initiated 10 projects at these universities with complementary research at Northrop Grumman. We will do this research collaboratively in consortium labs across the United States. These labs have leading staff, state-of-the-art facilities, and collaboration mechanisms to accelerate the results of the research into operations. We created the NGCRC for two reasons. First, the values of information systems and services have never been greater. Second, the cybersecurity threats have also never been greater. Greater value often implies greater threats. The Willie Sutton theory works well in cyberspace. We are participating in one of the most profound and rapid transformations in history. Internet technology has dramatically affected human lifestyles, and major industries like telecommunications, transportation, national security, and the news media. The web has grown from a few physicists exchanging research documents in 1989 to a global system that connects nearly 25% of the world's population. John Chambers, Cisco's CEO, said recently, quote, "The future is about speed, scale, and flexibility," unquote. Computing and networking technology growth will enable this future. Internet usage in the United States could easily be 10 to 15 times larger in 2015 than it is today. Much of this growth will come from major advances in video entertainment, communications, and e-commerce as technology and business innovation continue to develop at internet speed. However, we are also moving from an internet of people and computers to an internet of things. This technology will transform electric power, automobiles, real estate, home appliances, healthcare, and many other industries. Ubiquitous sensors will send data about the environment, traffic, structures, and other phenomena for real-time analysis and decisions. Enabling physical objects with computing and networking technology can have enormous benefits for public health, the economy, our security, and the environment. However, something could inhibit this: lack of security and trust. We have seen the severe effects of fraudulent behavior on our economy. We already have too many global headlines about cybercrime and identity theft. What happens if this situation worsens significantly? The large scale and rapid growth of the Internet provides many benefits, and it also creates many risks. Speed, scale, and flexibility also describe the cyber threats. The advantages are with the aggressors. Paul Strassman, former CIO for DOD, said last month, quote, "Defending the Internet is an unequaled contest. The aggressors do not need much money because they use the free Internet. The defenders are tied down by technologies that must cover their entire network," unquote. Even identifying the aggressors is very difficult with today's technology. The CEO of the UK's Office of Fair Trading said recently, "Online retailing is the future for many businesses and increasingly important to the economy. If consumers are not confident online, this will severely impact demand," unquote. Northrop Grumman has analyzed the vulnerabilities that enable cybercrime. Techniques for highly secure system design are a very high priority for the NGCRC. In June, DOD established the U.S. Cyber Command. Deputy Secretary William Lynn said the mission is to, quote, "coordinate the defense of our military networks," unquote. He said that DOD is facing continual attacks from, quote, "activists, organized crime, industrial spies, and foreign intelligence services," unquote. While large-scale cyber warfare has not yet occurred, it is a credible threat over the next several years. Cyber warfare could involve attacks not only on military systems, but also on critical national infrastructure like telecommunications, the power grid, and financial markets. That's why the scope of the NGCRC includes critical infrastructure protection as a high priority. We require leap-ahead technology developments in order to improve the posture of our defenders. This is the motivation for the NGCRC. We need significant new technology developments combined with improved security education, global standards, and an understanding of security economics and psychology in order to create really solid cybersecurity to give our defenders the advantage. Our NGCRC is all about creating these leap-ahead technologies to implement on a large scale. Northrop Grumman is recognized by many industry analysts as the leading provider of security systems and services to the U.S. public sector. We have received substantial recognition for this work. However, no one organization has the capabilities necessary to address all cybersecurity threats. We believe that these three very strong partners will complement us in meeting our research challenges. We wanted partners who, like Northrop Grumman, have a long, successful record in addressing cybersecurity issues. As an industry leader, Northrop Grumman tackles large-scale problems whose solutions require new ways of thinking about cyberspace. Our partners have the scale and depth to work with us to develop major innovations. CMU developed the first federally funded cybersecurity program, the Computer Emergency Response Team Coordination Center. This was established in 1989 in response to the Internet worm the preceding November. This was the first major cybersecurity incident. It stimulated prompt, visionary action by CMU. Building on this beginning, SciLab has become one of the largest academic research centers. Professor Pradeep Khosla, Dean of Engineering at CMU, the founder of SciLab, has worked with us to organize the CMU participation in the NGCRC. MIT was an early Internet pioneer with many key contributions to the architecture and operations of the Internet. There have been many successful commercial spin-offs from MIT in cybersecurity. MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory has many distinguished faculty researchers, including some Turing Award winners. The Turing Award is the closest thing there is to a Nobel Prize in computer science. This year's winner, Professor Barbara Liskov, is a principal investigator in the NGCRC. Purdue University's Sirius is the largest academic cybersecurity center in the U.S. It has developed a unique vision of how to protect cyber resources with a multidisciplinary approach to education, research, and outreach. Purdue had the first PhD program in computer science and has produced about 25% of the PhDs in cybersecurity over the past several years. The Sirius founder, Professor Gene Spafford, is the recipient of many awards, most recently the Computing Research Association Award, and he is managing the Sirius participation in the NGCRC. The first airplane flight happened more than 100 years ago. The first satellites launched more than 50 years ago. Aviation and space security concepts were virtually unknown 20 years after these events. The World Wide Web began only 20 years ago. We are at the dawn of our understanding of cybersecurity. However, we are seeing how rapidly events can occur in cyberspace. Cybersecurity has rapidly become an issue of national importance to the health of our people, to our security, and to the economy. Securing cyberspace will require new ways of thinking and doing business. The NGCRC mission is very consistent with this national priority. Our intent is to increase the scope and depth of our activities in the future with broader industry and industry partner collaboration as we continue to accelerate the transfer of research to operations. We are very confident that the NGCRC will develop leap-ahead technologies and make significant contributions to the cybersecurity of our nation. Thank you.
We'll take a few words from each of the universities, and then we'll start with MIT. You can talk from there if you prefer, or come up here.
Yep. Hi, my name is Howard Schrobe. I'm a principal research scientist in the CCL, as it's called, the Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab. We are the largest interdisciplinary lab on the MIT campus, comprising more than 800 members, faculty, postdocs, graduate students, and undergraduate researchers. We have, as Bob has mentioned, we have a very long tradition in computer security research and innovative computer architectures and network designs going back to some very pioneering systems such as the Multics system of the late 60s, one of the earliest secure computing projects. We have three projects that are part of this consortium. The first Bob mentioned briefly, which is Professor Liskov's project, which deals with information flow and secure logging. A second project led by Dr. Daniel Jackson, which deals with dependable software analysis. And I'll talk briefly about the third project, humbly because it's mine. And this one deals with a novel computer architecture. We start with the observation that the major problem we face in security of the overall network stems from insecurities within each computing system. That is, the overall network design, although certainly consisting of many flaws, most of the attacks that we see take advantage of flaws within each computing node. Therefore, our project focuses on designing a new style of computer which has far fewer vulnerabilities. Part of this project is hardware-oriented, and part of it is software-oriented, but the hardware provides an a non-bypassable base for the higher-level software features that are part of the system. To explain briefly what this is about, the root of the problem is that the computers don't know what they're doing. They don't know right from wrong. And the reason they don't know that is because they don't know what they're computing with. In fact, we tend to think of what's inside the computer once it's all there as a running program is just a bunch of raw seething bits, a phrase coined by a friend of mine. What this means is that the computer can be told by an attacker who manages to insert incorrect code into the system to add one to a character string or to store data outside the bounds of an array. And because the computer has nothing but these raw seething bits, it's incapable of knowing that it's doing the wrong thing. Well, what's the solution to that problem? It's obviously to tell the computer more about what it's doing, and that involves including metadata describing what kind of data we have. So if it knows that it has a string and it's being told to add one to the string, it knows that's nonsensical and will refuse to do it, issue an error. If it's told to store outside the bounds of an array, similarly, it can say that that's not an allowable operation. The final thing it knows about, the first two being examples of semantic weaknesses, the third one is one that has to do with access control. So as an example, it might make sense to allow me to change my data. For example, I might change my middle name if I felt like it. But it's not allowable for me to go and change Bob's middle name or Barbara's middle name because I don't own that data. Again, this is information not typically represented inside the computing system, but if we put it in, we can then enforce access control rules and build a system with many layers of protection, what we refer to as a belt and suspenders approach, that is defense in depth, in which both the hardware and the software perform many checks before allowing an operation to have dangerous effects. Now, to make this efficient, the hardware needs to be able to do some of these checks as the computing is going on. And it turns out that we've come up with what we think is a very simple and elegant way of doing this by having within the processor a parallel unit that looks at this metadata and compares it against a set of rules saying what's allowed and what isn't. If the operation is allowed, it can compute a new piece of metadata for the result that reflects the provenance of the data that's been computed. Where did it come from, what type of data it is, and so on. If it's not allowed, it issues a trap and the bad operation is prevented. Because this is done at the hardware level, it's completely systematic, it happens on every cycle, and it provides a base level of checking that then allows us to build up operating system and application software, which itself provides more global types of checks, but does so knowing that those operations can't be bypassed by an attacker. Our goal is to make this kind of computing the norm. Obviously, we have many things to prove out before that happens, but hopefully these ideas can take on and become part of the mainstream of computing.
Okay, now Dr. Perrig from Carnegie Mellon.
Good morning. My name is Adrian Perrick. I'm a professor in three departments, electrical and computer engineering, engineering and public policy, as well as computer science. And I also serve as the technical director of our cybersecurity laboratory at Carnegie Mellon. So as Dr. Bremer was presenting, we face a spectrum of diverse and escalating threats on our critical infrastructures. So as a nation, we have the power grid, financial systems, air traffic control, and other systems that are vulnerable to cyber attacks. In business and governments, we have our information is threatened by spies and cyber criminals that attempt to steal this information. And as individuals, we are threatened. Our identity is threatened of being stolen by cyber criminals and being misused in cyberspace. At Carnegie Mellon SciLab, we have a number of research goals and approaches to deal with these vulnerabilities. So first of all, we take an interdisciplinary approach combining technology as well as economics and other technologies to address these issues. So we attempt to preserve the security properties also in presence of implementation and human errors. In fact, the human element is one of the main aspects that we attempt to deal with. At universities, it's oftentimes easy to forget that not everybody has a PhD in computer science or computer security. And so people oftentimes make mistakes. And exactly this issue is one of the core issues that threaten security, because ultimately people are using the systems and people make mistakes. And we attempt to build systems that provide security properties despite human errors. So at SciLab, we have several research thrusts that are that we use in combination to address these vulnerabilities. You have on this diagram across the list of seven major research thrusts and seven cross-cutting thrusts. Let me briefly go through a few of them. So we look at trustworthy computing platforms and devices, which is one topic I will talk about more in detail in a little while. We also look at next-generation secure and available networks, because ultimately a lot of the information we communicate with, we need to ensure that that information travels safely and securely across our networks. Mobility is another major aspect, because people are increasingly using cell phones and smartphones for a number of operations, and handling security in such a mobile environment is a very challenging problem. We also look at security of cyber-physical systems, secure home computing, survivable distributed systems, as well as privacy protection. So at Carnegie Mellon SciLab, we have a number of centers that handle and that delve into various security topics. So we have a trustworthy computing center, a biometrics center that develops biometrics technologies, a usable privacy and security lab, as well as a research center on mobility. We have faculty and researchers from six different colleges. There's roughly 50 faculty affiliated with SciLab and 130 PhD students that are actively researching security topics. So let me briefly talk in a little bit more detail about our trustworthy computing effort. In 2008, there were roughly 100 million laptops and desktops that shipped with a module called the TPM, Trusted Platform Module. This is a security chip that is built into the systems that attempts, has a number of properties that helps you safeguard data as well as remotely validate data that is executing on your computer. In 2010, we estimate that roughly 200 million of these chips will ship. And if you have a newer computer, there's a good chance that your computer already has this technology built in. Now, at SciLab, we have a number of research projects that whose goal it is to leverage these technologies and to get very strong assurance what the computer is currently doing that you're currently using. It can oftentimes be frustrating if you have the computer in front of you and you don't really know what it's doing, because it could run malware or other malicious software that steals your identity or steals your keystrokes as you're typing them. And at Scilab, we, our goal is to leverage these technologies to achieve a very high level of security for your common applications, and so that you as a user yourself get very strong assurance that your computer is not stealing your keystrokes, is not stealing your identity, and is executing the software you think it's executing. In the context of this consortium, we are applying these technologies to the protection of critical infrastructures and to achieve this very high level of assurance. So as part of this consortium, we have three projects that are listed here. The first project looks at detection mechanisms and considers integrity attacks and on sensing and control software systems. This is Professor Sinopoli is working on this project. The second project is by Professor Brumley, and it's looking at minimizing the attack window for exploitable bugs. So he's looking at building systems that attempt to prioritize bugs in software. So when you have usually in common software projects, you have thousands of bugs that you know about. The question is, which ones do you address first? And he built automated ways to guide people towards which bugs should be addressed first. Finally, the last project is by Dr. Vasudevan and myself, and we built a system for real-time execution trace recording and analysis. And this is a system that allows you to detect in real time that your system is under attack, and as well as after the fact answer the question, has my system been attacked? So this attempts also to answer the question. Sometimes you have a vulnerability that becomes known after the fact. And this is a problem because you never know whether your system was attacked with that vulnerability. So now our system allows you to go back in time and check whether this vulnerability was used against your system, and also tries to answer the question, what exactly have the attackers done, even though the actions happened may have happened weeks earlier.
And we'll conclude our opening remarks with Dr. Spafford of Purdue.
Thank you, and good morning. The problem of protecting our cyber infrastructure, our information, our processing capabilities is not a new problem. It's one that many of us have been warning about for nearly three decades. The problems have been anticipated and seen in advance. Unfortunately, many of those warnings have not been taken seriously, particularly by government and by much of industry, and the result has been that problems have been addressed only after they've occurred rather than proactively. Funds and resources of various kinds, legislation, have come about as a result of problems that have already occurred that could have been prevented because they were anticipated. Part of this problem is one where the limited resources available have caused those of us in academia sometimes to compete against each other rather than working together to solve some of the problems. And that's an aspect of this consortium that is most gratifying, is that we are able to work together with such a great team. Purdue University is a land-grant public university in Indiana, and the history of cybersecurity education goes back well before that term was coined by Senator Sam Nunn. We have had coursework and research going on in this area for over 30 years. Sirius as a center doesn't stretch back quite that far, but it was set up as a multidisciplinary research center. We have almost 100 faculty, staff, and postdocs from 18 different departments across campus, looking at everything from policy and psychology, education, all the way through hardware design, communications protocols, and software. We have approached the consortium with four projects that are being funded out of the various areas that we do research. And one of those is in fast forensics. This is on the aspect of investigation after something occurs. Professor Rick Mislin is expanding on some of his beginning research to develop tools and technology that allow investigators, those people who are in the field investigating some form of criminal activity, to quickly do forensics on cell phones and PDAs and others, no matter what the vendor or how that information is present on those devices. From the standpoint of modeling what goes on in the network and to understand some of the protocols, Professor Sonia Fahmy is doing work on how to partition experiments to be modeled on cyber ranges, an area where Northrop Grumman has a great deal of expertise. And the issue here is that we can't really experiment on the live Internet, that some of the things that we want to test, we need to be able to test in a very large scale, looking at potentially millions of hosts. And there are no test beds for that. So how do we decompose experiments to allow that to happen? A third problem is building systems in a way that gives us advantages in analyzing them when things go wrong. How do we know who inserted information? How do we know if the information is accurate? Where did the information come from, and how was it transformed? Professor Lisa Bertino, one of the most senior researchers in information security and who is here today if you have questions after the session, is examining this and how do we mark application data and databases in a way that we can attribute the source, trace it back, determine how that information was altered, and do this in a way that doesn't alter the information in such a way that it is no longer useful to the applications involved. Our fourth project by Professor Bharat Bhargava is in examining some of the issues, a context-based adaptable defense against collaborative attacks. As we develop social services, cloud computing, autonomous agents, and other kinds of things out in the network that work together, often in ways that we don't even see how they're connected, those systems not only present us great opportunities for new research, but they also present opportunities for those who would wish to cause us harm. Distributed denial-of-service attacks with botnets are a crude example, but now we're building services that work together, and the question is, how could those be subverted? How could those be used in a way that could cause us harm, and can we anticipate that, prevent it, and detect it as we go forward? In summary, we're looking at four projects. We actually have a lot of others that are going on. But this is a really unique opportunity for the community, I think for all of us, to work together. We have some wonderful resources and people to do this. This is a case where we're looking ahead to the future for a change rather than being reactive. We're actually looking at problems that we know are going to come, but we're not facing them quite yet. And it gives us an opportunity to get ahead. And we're hoping that maybe this will serve as an example for other organizations to step forward and start taking the threat a little more seriously. We're really happy that Northrop Grumman is pioneering in this area. Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll take some questions now. And I will ask you to use the microphone. And the reason I do that is we are webcasting. So I'd like to make sure that your questions do, in fact, go out to the audience as well. So can we get the microphones up front? Here we go.
Bill Jackson with Government Computer News. I would assume that the projects you guys are taking on are playing to your strengths. So if you're doing the things you're good at already, how much value do you get out of collaboration? How much is Purdue going to get out of working with MIT if you're working in an area where Purdue already has expertise?
I'll take that one on first. The projects that we selected were chosen from a very broad range of possible areas, and you're correct. I mean, obviously, we wanted to choose projects at which the individual universities had real strengths. We chose them also to match areas that Northrop Grumman considered to be priorities. So in the concept of operations for this consortium, this is not the individual universities doing their own thing. This is a consortium working collaboratively, and so we're matching our own researchers with the universities to collaborate in this research. It's not just us, you know, giving grants to a university and coming back at the end of the year and telling us what they did. This is intended to be an active collaboration. We'll also get the consortium together as an entire consortium a couple of times a year to exchange research results and to build communication among these universities as well as with Northrop Grumman. So I think we'll all learn things from one another, and doing this and really shortening the communication lines is an important part of our strategy in accelerating the transfer of these research results to operations.
Let me add to that and say it goes, again, key to the idea here. We're not trying to build a solution to an existing problem. We're looking at research issues, and that means we don't know the answer. And so the consortium is going to give us the opportunity to leverage into knowledge and expertise across a wide range of areas and experiences to come up with those solutions, and that's going to be a real advantage.
Middle of the room.
Thanks. Ben Bain with Federal Computer Week. I was curious, how much are the grants for? I think you mentioned 5 years was the total research time. And also, are these results going to be made publicly available, or are they all going to be Northrop Grumman information that's going to be used for some of the contracts you have, or is it going to go out through the universities? How are the results going to be made available?
Well, the answer to the first part of your question is, this is millions of dollars that we're spending on this, and so this is something we take very seriously, and certainly the results we believe will provide us competitive advantage as we build our business. The universities, of course, under the terms of our agreements with them, have their freedom to publish. There may be some opportunities for intellectual property, patents perhaps may come out of this. This is a research program, so it's not entirely predictable exactly what's going to happen here, but we have very good reason to be confident that we'll get some significant results.
In the back, in the corner.
Max Kakis from Federal News Radio. Two questions for Dr. Brammer. One, could you give us a figure for Northrop Grumman's dollar investment in the consortium, the commitment that you're making to this? And two, was there any consideration, Dr. Brammer, to having a federal partner in this? Because you have agencies like NIST, you have any number of other government agencies who are concerned with the cybersecurity question. Was there any consideration given to having a federal partner be part of the consortium?
Well, as I said earlier, our investment overall will be some number of millions of dollars per year. Communication with federal partners, we will be talking with them a lot about this, and not only federal partners, but also industry partners as well. One of the things that will be necessary ultimately to get these research results into operations will be to have some of the product companies build these research results into their products. And we're really only interested in ideas that will be implementable on a very large scale, because you think of the projects that we take on are very large scale operations. So partnering, close communications with the government agencies and also industry partners is certainly an important part of our strategy.
Question over here. Microphone, please. Just there you go.
Jim Wolf, Reuters. How about the way in which you'll divide any revenues or the fruits of any intellectual property or patents? Is there a formula for that?
Well, we have the agreements. Generally, what they say is that intellectual property that's developed uniquely by the universities is theirs. intellectual property developed uniquely by Northrop Grumman is ours. Intellectual property that is developed jointly, we will deal with on a case-by-case basis.
Otto Kreischer with Congress Daily. One of the big problems, particularly the government has on cybersecurity, is knowing where the attacks came from. Professor Stanford mentioned, I think that was one of the projects that they're working on. Since many of the sophisticated attacks are using multiple channels, robots, and that sort of things, how successful do you think you are to track back a serious government-level attack on the system?
That isn't specifically the focus of the project, but it may be a side effect from some of what is developed that could be built into the protocols involved. The Internet has grown up and is successful in part because there are few controls in place that monitor where things come from or where they go, and there are interesting privacy and other considerations involved with putting too much monitoring in place. But I think if you look across the range of all the projects that we're looking at, not only within the consortium, but the universities and Northrop Grumman are looking at in general, there are a variety of ways to address this problem, not simply by tracing back after the fact, but by preventing some of those attacks from occurring and being successful. So it's a larger problem that will take quite some time to solve, and attribution is only a part of it.
I think, Dr. Peard, you talked about forensics as well.
Right. So, but that itself isn't exactly for attribution as well. But we've done research in the past where we were able to identify the origin of IP packets, because as we know in the Internet, packets are anonymous, so to speak, in that somebody can easily put an arbitrary address into it and it'll still make it a destination. It's similar to when you send a letter to a destination. You can always put someone else's address into the from field. It's exactly the same thing in the Internet, and the packets will make it back, but still it can be important to trying to still figure out who did send the message or who did send that packet. And we have had research in the past that addressed exactly that problem. However, it's not the research that we're doing this time for the consortium. But we are working on a system that is a very active research problem to answer the question, did somebody attack me in the last month using this specific vulnerability? Because vulnerabilities and viruses sometimes become known only after they've already been used. And so going back, providing the ability of going back and verifying that you have not been attacked or that you have been attacked and exactly knowing what has been done is a very important aspect. And that we do locally, and we can answer this question based on our research that we're collaborating with Northrop Grumman.
Question from Bill here.
Bill Sweetman, Defense Technology International Magazine. A question for Dr. Bremer. Strategically in doing this, is Northrop Grumman looking to improve its capabilities in providing cybersecurity to its primary customer base, the defense and intelligence? Or are you also looking at expanding and providing cybersecurity technology with partners, perhaps, to the wider world, to deal with economic crime, to deal with public safety, public assurance, network assurance issues, even in the business world?
Well, let me say first, our current business includes a number of civil government agencies as well as defense and intelligence. And also, we're expanding internationally. In fact, we've just been awarded a contract from the UK Technology Strategy Board in collaboration with British Telecom, in which we'll be building a cyber range in the UK, a unique facility. So, yes, we have very definite interests in broadening our business base into civil agencies. We do a lot of work in public safety. That's a major market for us as well, and Homeland Security. So you shouldn't think of as only as being in the defense and intelligence business.
Additional questions? Right there on the end, if you would.
Colin Clark, DoD Buzz. Northrop, I'm wondering if you're doing this in part because, as a very large and somewhat bureaucratic organization, like the people you primarily sell to, are you reaching out to more nimble groups that are able to react more quickly?
Well, I guess what I would say is we're reaching out to find some of the finest talent we can find. I mean, no matter how large and functional your organization is, it's certainly obviously true that most of the smart people in the world do not work for you. And so an outreach mechanism of this sort we regard as very important to our strategy.
Please. The microphone, please.
Dr. Perig, I wanted to follow up on something you were saying about attribution because I'm not sure that I entirely understood. You said that you've identified certain IP packets as part of an effort to determine attribution. But I thought you said that anyone can put an arbitrary address and spoof the system. So how do you actually believe that you may be, how close are you to being able to confidently predict attribution?
So that's been a question that's been very active in the research communities about 5 years ago, where people have been working on an effort called IP traceback, where despite the anonymity of the original source, you were able to tell where the packet came from. Now, this requires network support, so there's been a very large number of different schemes that have been proposed. There's also been an IETF working group that worked on this IP traceback question. And with the support of routers, you were then able to, based on a stream of packets, to identify roughly where that source of those packets was. So you weren't able to attribute it to a specific machine, but you could tell. And there's a lot of different schemes in this space. They all have different trade-offs, but essentially the idea was that you could roughly tell what is the origin where these packets came from.
And so you can predict with a high degree of confidence the origin?
Right. So there's many different schemes. Some of them require about thousands of packets, and after thousands of packets from an individual source, you could then identify roughly where they were from. Some of the most recent schemes, including one that we have designed, allowed you to, based on a very small number of packets, just 5 to 10 packets, you were able to tell where they were from. And this was important, and you could block them or install filters at those network sites.
Mm-hmm. Back to Otto, if you would.
Otto Kreischer again. You know, Homeland Security hearings have indicated a problem in being able to tell that there's a widespread attack because many of the private entities don't like to tell, you know, anybody that they're under attack for their own proprietary security reasons. Are any of the things that you're working on would allow the government to know that there's a broad-based attack on the system that goes beyond government systems into the private sector, power systems, and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think there's two parts to the answer to that question. One is technological and one is policy. So the technological part is what we work on, we collectively, and that's being able to detect attacks and as well as possible diagnose and prevent them. The second part is the information sharing part, which I agree with you is an essential component of overall network survivability. But that's a policy question as well as a technological one, and that's outside the scope of what the consortium's doing.
There was a question over there on the side, and then I'll come back to you.
Emilio Adolfo Rivero, Accuracy Media. A question limited to national security and foreign powers. Have you been able to detect whether we are the first in the world in this type of research?
The question is, can we say with assurance that that the universities in the U.S. are foremost in the world?
Well, I don't know that we could claim to know everything about every part of research that's going on across the world. We're reasonably conversant about published research in this area, and we believe we have many unique aspects here. And we believe we're in a leadership position. But I think that's really what I'd be prepared to say about that.
Comment on from the universities on
comment
that?
On yeah, that?
It's difficult to come up with a metric to be able to use there. As universities, we have a mission of not only doing research, but also providing education and producing another generation of practitioners. There are organizations here and abroad that do research into some of these same issues, but they don't publish their results. They're commercial or they're government closely held. We don't know about those in general. And those are not organizations that are involved in developing education and new practitioners in the arena. But I think, as Bob said, from the standpoint of what's published and what people generally recognize as leading institutions, the three of our institutions are clearly acknowledged as leaders in the field.
Good question here from Jim.
Jim Wolf again, Reuters. Much has been made recently, notably by a U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission, of the alleged state-sponsored cyber threat coming from China. And I wondered if I could ask the academics here whether this matches your research or any knowledge that you have firsthand of the extent of the threat to your systems or others on which you're familiar. State sponsorship, state-sponsored efforts at cyber espionage and this sort of thing, and emanating supposedly from China.
I don't think we're privy to information that any of you aren't also privy to. That is, there's certainly been lots of published information about such things. But we have, I'm not sure I'm speaking for everybody, but I know for myself and my colleagues that we don't have any special channels of information that regard to, you know, other nation states and their operations.
The problems of cybersecurity, cybercrime are global. And I think it's safe to say that large companies, governments, and citizens of every country are under attack by forces from other countries, and we see a lot of criminal activity coming from many places around the world. To say whether or not those are state-sponsored is beyond our ability to tell from just looking at the results. If someone is shutting down a retailer or stealing credit card information, what is the source of that? Why is that being done? That's beyond anything we can tell with the technology we have available. But the problem is a global one. It is not limited to the United States. It's not limited to China. It's not limited to any other country. As Bob said in his comments, the Willie Sutton effect of why did he rob banks? Because that's where the money is. Well, the money now and the information is online. And we did a report that was funded by the McAfee company called Unsecured Economies, where we found that companies around the world are under threat from industrial espionage, that they are having proprietary information stolen in the tens of billions of dollars per year. That's another aspect of this that is not necessarily state-sponsored or involved, but is facing companies operating anywhere globally. So it's a huge problem, and that's something that may not really even be important in the overall scheme of things as to who's sponsoring it.
So back in the corner again. Another question from there.
Max Cactus from Federal News Radio again. I'm wondering if the gentleman from the universities would talk about whether their research will delve into cloud computing and the challenges of cybersecurity in cloud computing. It's a relatively probably not new area of IT, but certainly a growing area and one in which people are have some concerns. Will the consortium's research look into that?
Everybody's nodding yes. Is there an answer beyond yes?
Well, we can certainly give you some examples. The technologies I mentioned based on the trustworthy computing have direct applicability because it allows you to answer the question which software is currently executing on that machine and which software is handling my data. Now, in all these technologies, though, that or in this trusted computing technologies, you need to trust the physical hardware of that you're running the software on. But if the physical hardware is correct, you get very strong guarantees. And so many of the research problems that we're they're addressing are directly applicable, and the research prototypes we're building are directly applicable to cloud computing as well.
I would make the observation that cloud that trying to put security on cloud computing is similar to what I was talking earlier about patching problems as they exist rather than looking at fundamental problems. And it may well be that cloud computing is the answer to a question, and the question doesn't include security as part of its formulation. So it may not be the appropriate way to go for highly secure systems.
Let me address two of the questions that have come in from people that are out on the webcast. The first one is asked for a specific number on how much Northrop Grumman is spending on the consortium, and I think the answer in general is the specific number is proprietary and competitive sensitive. We've answered that. That answer is the number is in the millions, and this is a long-term project over a number of years. So to be honest, the number is probably not really known at this time. The second question here says, understanding that Dr. Spafford said these projects are not meant to address existing problems, do any of you envision a scenario where a particular project could be accelerated to address current cybersecurity issues?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, and that for...
When we selected these projects, we tried for a balance between short-term goals and longer-term goals. And as Gina said, we are trying to be proactive and to anticipate problems that may not yet occur. Excuse me. On the other hand, we're working very hard to shorten the communication lines among the consortium members so that we can accelerate these results. And we're already seeing some ideas that we can put into some of our major proposals right now. So, yes, by all means.
Okay, we're coming up on an hour here. I think probably we'll hit one last question right there in the middle of the room.
Several years, is that 5 years that you mentioned? I just want to be clear.
Well, I mean, there's nothing... I mean, my guess would be this will go on well beyond 5 years. But in dealing with the universities, and when you have students perhaps starting a PhD program, you don't want to – they aren't going to write their thesis in 1 year. So this is a longer-term commitment, and we've given that to each of the universities.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll conclude the formal part of our briefing now, and we'll hang around for a little while and take additional questions if you want to talk to any of the representatives. Thank you.